ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
My, oh my, what a Monday we have in store here on the ESPN College Football Podcast. I'd say it's a Monday tradition unlike any other, but this Monday is going to break tradition of all kinds. Kirk Herbstreit, Matt Barry alongside. Herb, you know, you and I are the podcast that goes on the field, X's and O's, breaks down the games, and we're going to get into all of that from a wild, wild rivalry weekend. But I believe we need to start with the seismic news off the field and the hiring of Lincoln Riley away from Oklahoma to be the next head coach of USC.
Well, it's funny, after the game, the media, it's been speculated about him going to Baton Rouge for 3 weeks. And finally, the media asked him after Bedlam in a game they lost in a heartbreaker. And he got a little irritated, you know, because, you know, he wasn't in a right frame of mind to begin with after a loss. And then he kind of interrupted the question saying, listen, I'm not going to LSU. I'm not going to be the LSU coach. And I'm sure a lot of OU fans were like, whoo, lost the game, but at least coach is staying. And then the next day, of course, it's announced that he's headed to USC. So I don't begrudge him at all. I'm not an OU alum, but I think he didn't let it affect him. You know, he continued to coach. He continued to do his thing. Who knows how long it's been in the works. But, I mean, they were a whisker away from winning that game and finishing a really strong season, going to the Big 12 championship, which would have probably put all this on the back burner.
Right.
Who knows what would have happened or when it would have happened. I've talked with Mike Bone yesterday. I've talked, who's the AD at USC. I've talked with Joe Castiglione for a long time yesterday about all this. He was shocked and surprised, you know, when he got the call from Lincoln. And they did everything in their power to try to keep him. It's a great place. Lincoln made it abundantly clear. This is not a knock on OU. It's not a knock on, I wish we had more. I wish we had better facilities. I wish this, I wish that. They don't provide everything. I'm out of here. It was nothing like that. It was more of, wow, what an incredible opportunity. And what can USC be? I think it was just, I'm going to scratch that itch. You know, I think it was that and nothing at all. How could you not want to stay with Joe Castiglione?
Right.
The setup that they have, they're about to go to the SEC. And that, of course, the naysayers are going to say, he's afraid of the SEC. That's what it is. And I don't think it's that. I just think he wanted a new start, you know, and so it's sad for an end of an era. Joe Castiglione is one of the best ADs there is.
No question.
He's going to go hire a big gun. You will be happy in another few days or how he said he's going to go. He's going tempo offense on this. So, I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take, but he's going to hire somebody and he's going to swing for the fences. And they're going to go into the SEC with, you know, their ducks in a row. They're going to be ready to roll. So I'm not worried about OU long term with Joe in charge. The Pac-12. USC. When was the last time we talked about USC other than Clay Helton's on the hot seat? When was the last time Lane Kiffin on the tarmac? Like, what was the last time we talked about USC where we talked about them in a way it's like, woo-hoo-hoo, what? There we go, Trojans. Like, what was the last time, dude? I mean, it's been forever since we got excited about the Pac-12 and about USC. So, this is monumental for college football, for the Pac-12, for USC. The Lincoln Riley and everything that he has to offer is going to Southern California. Because what's been missing, you know better than anybody in USC, they haven't recruited.
Right.
All these quarterbacks at Alabama and Ohio State and all over the country, they're all from Southern California. How many times have I heard from people out there say, man, why can't we keep our homegrown talent? They're going to Oregon. They're going everywhere. And now Lincoln Riley, with his pedigree and what he's done, the quarterbacks he's turned out as Heisman winners, first picks overall in the draft, he's bringing that brand to Southern California. So now all these hotshot quarterbacks that are developed there, they might look at Alabama. They might look at Ohio State. They might look elsewhere. But they're going to definitely look at USC and want to have a chance to play for Lincoln Riley. So that's the first thing. And when you recruit NFL-style quarterbacks, what else comes? wide receivers. Yep. They have an abundance of wide receivers, right?
Running in that backs.
Running backs. Yeah. So this is huge for the region, for the team, the school. And you know this because this is your brand. I'll let you go, but this is the Pac-12. How do you get the Pac-12 to matter? You get the blue bloods to matter. And so I'm very, very excited for the Pac-12 and for SC. And as just a fan of the sport, I'm happy that Lincoln Riley is decided to go there because I know OU is going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I think this is long-term. It's a win-win. I think it is right now for USC, and eventually when they get their coach, they're going to be okay in Norman.
I've said this for a while and people don't like it, but the Pac-12 is a USC conference. That's it. When USC's up, the Pac-12's up. When USC's down, the Pac-12's down. The conference has one national brand. Sorry, Oregon, it's USC. Oregon's next, but it's always stopped and started with USC. Even Washington back in the day won national championships. The two things that came to mind when I heard this news, one, hell, the rest of the Pac-12 didn't take advantage when USC was down because they've been down for a while and none of these other programs were able to elevate themselves, save for Oregon and Utah in some spots, weren't able to take advantage of that dominant Pete Carroll USC brand being down. That was part one. Part two, you hit on it. This is the school of modern day quarterbacks. Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez, Matt Barkley. This is how you build USC. And when you've got guys, and I know he struggled, but DJ Uiagalelei is a St. John Bosco kid. He's all the way out in the upstate of South Carolina.
Bryce Young. DJ Stroud.
All of them. And so if I'm Lincoln Riley, yeah, I can get Caleb Williams. He's going to be a phenomenal quarterback. He already is. They got Spencer Rattler out of Arizona. That's another one in the footprint. If I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm thinking, you know what? I inherited this program from Bob Stoops. I was given the keys to a ready-made live-in house. But now I get to go to a house in a very secluded neighborhood that's a fixer-upper. When's the last time a brand of this stature was a fixer-upper? Lincoln Riley didn't have to leave the greater Los Angeles area to put the parts in place to make USC good again. There are five programs in this country, Kirk, that I believe that make college football great when they are good. And USC is one of them. The fight song, the Trojan, the history, the Reggie Bush, the Chris Claibornes, just the day that was the Troy Polamalu, that's USC. And of all the home run hires that fit what they need, you could stamp this one, maybe one of the best that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Of what did they need? What did they need? They needed swagger. Well, what does Lincoln Riley do? He brings quarterbacks and offense. That is so Hollywood. I bet Matt Leinart's running around USC just celebrating right now. Like, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think fans that aren't familiar with SC need to understand when Leinart and Bush and company were there with Pete Carroll, before he got to the Seahawks, he was chewing gum and wearing Ray-Bans on the sideline at SC, and he made USC cool. And in Southern California, you've got to make those colors and that hat cool.
Yep.
So when kids want to wear that hat, they're wearing that to high school games and they're wearing it around, and it's a cool brand to wear. Lincoln Riley has that vibe about it. He has a presence because of what he's been able to do. And the quarterbacks like a Baker Mayfield, like a Kyler Murray, now a Caleb Williams, the guys that he's been around and the offenses that he's been able to create, it catches your attention and it's sexy. You know what I mean? It's like guys want to play in that system. And he's got the look, you know what I mean?
That's right.
You could just see him on that USC sideline in the LA Coliseum. And I feel like USC, you don't just want to find a good coach. You want a guy who fits your brand, right? This guy is a great coach, a great leader, and he fits the brand to a T. So I'm excited, man. And in the transfer portal era, not a huge fan of it, but we do live in this era.
Yep.
Be interesting to see, does Caleb Williams come with him? Do other players from OU, do other players around the country? How quickly can he reload that roster and get SC not only ready to contend in the Pac-12 South, and for Pac-12 championships, but reload and try to get back to where OU is. How quickly? Because he's going to do it. No question in my mind. He's going to do it.
He's an Arity Jackson Dart, who's a hell of a player. Yeah. But I'm with you on Caleb. That's the first thing I thought of, because we've seen a lot of decommits already.
And does he ask Caleb, hey Caleb, hey man, let's go to USC, or does he say, I can't do that to my school. I love OU. It's different if Caleb says, Coach, man, I really came here to play for you in this system. Is it cool if I come with you to SC? That's a different set of circumstances than convincing Caleb and his family, hey, come with me to USC. Now you leave OU high and dry. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up out there, but how does it work out might be an interesting kind of side story.
Yeah, and the other side story there is, what if OU lures Mike Leach, right? If Mike Leach comes to a place where he was an assistant and Caleb's like, oh, okay, well, I think it depends on the hire too. Do these players wait patiently to see if you bring in a Lane Kiffin or a Mike Leach or an offensive guy? If you bring in a Mark Stoops, who's built the program on defense, because you're right, players now, as much as fans don't want to hear this, and you know this better than anybody, it's nice to say, no, I'm coming to play for the University of Oakland. I'm coming to play for OU. I'm coming to play. No, you're coming to play to the system. You're coming to play for the coach. Billy Napier was hired because he's an offensive guy to attract guys at Florida. I get it. Florida's got history, but Kirk, you know, as well as anybody, these kids are playing for the coach more, I think so, than playing for the school.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely that way now. I think it always has been to a certain extent, but we just didn't have the volatility. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you go to a school and 2 years later, there's a new coach, whether he gets fired or he leaves to go somewhere else. I think that's a real concern for me right now with sport, is there's so much movement, you know, guys, assistant coaches, coordinators, head coaches, just, you know, whether they're fired or they move out on their own. It's hard to really find continuity anymore. And when you do find it, you know, for me personally, I would gravitate towards continuity. I would gravitate towards stability on a coaching staff as a quarterback. Because I would hate to go somewhere and a year or two later, boom, rug's pulled out. And now I got a tough decision to make. So, and I think that's why you see some of these long-term contracts. You know, James Franklin, now it seems like he's going to be at Penn State for a long time. Mel Tucker, a long time. You know, I think having stability is very important. But man, what a crazy weekend. You know, that was kind of the culmination on Sunday when some of the news came out. You know, Napier didn't even get really talked about, but, you know, he's now in Florida and leaves Louisiana, where he really took them to another level. And I'm excited for Florida because I think Billy's a class act, and I think he'll do it the right way at Florida, build them back up. And I think I have a lot of confidence in the programs that he's been a part of as an assistant, what he's learned and what he'll bring in. And now he has experience as a head coach. So I think Scott Strickland did a really good job of hitting a home run there. And the other thing is, we had great games. I mean, Thursday night, you know, Thanksgiving, a lot of people watch NFL football. I'm watching the Egg Bowl. I wanted to see if Lane Kiffin could get to 10 wins. I watched your game. It was incredible. I mean, how great that kind of sums up college football. NC State and North Carolina, and I'm watching every single snap of that game, because it was just, why did I watch? You know, it's the competition of a rivalry game, you know, and it didn't impact the playoff or any of that nonsense. It was just two teams that don't like each other that are going to do everything they can to win the game. And it looked like NC State was pretty much gone and done. And then they hit the big pass late, and then they get the onside kick, and then they hit another pass. I mean, it was like in a blink of an eye. You had to have so much fun calling that.
I was getting ready to go into full Sam Howell coronation mode. When they hit the 51-yard field goal, Roddy and I are like, Sam Howell, what a great quarterback he's been to build the foundation in North Carolina. And then you're right. They score so quick, NC State. You're like, wait a second. We're not done here yet. Like, we're not done. And that game to me typified what rivalries are all about, because any given week, Kirk, that's going to be a big win for a program. How you come back, you're down 9 with a minute 25 something left in the game. But to do it the way they did it against who they did it is what makes that weekend so special. Yeah. Bedlam, the game that you called, the last time we saw Lincoln Riley as the head coach of Oklahoma. Oklahoma State was down 9 and listless. There was nothing there. There was the safety. There was the punt mess up. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they scored. There's a punt mess up on their part. Oklahoma State's got the lead. Mike Gundy gets his win. It makes it so special to watch this happen on rivalries. LSU comes back from the dead to get Coach O a win. Auburn blows the Iron Bowl. I mean, this stuff is so good on the final weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I tell you, I had an interesting weekend where I come to Ann Arbor, and there Friday, Saturday morning, we do game day. The first 2 hours, just right outside of the big house, we move in the last hour, and you could just feel the energy. I mean, I've got my earpieces in, so you can't really hear, but the mic, the Madonna mic, allows you to kind of feel the energy. And you're focused on, like, you know how it is, you're focused on what you're saying, but you can just feel. And you got snow coming down, you see the teams warming up. You know, it's not just Ohio State who's trying to make a run to a playoff or a Big Ten championship, but Michigan is too. And Harbaugh is trying to beat Ohio State for the first time. So you just feel just kind of like energy of just, this is a heavyweight fight. And I take, as soon as the show's over, take my earpieces out. We're right at the 20. The ball's about to go in the air. We're just standing there. I'm just looking around. In an empty stadium last year, these two teams didn't even play each other. Empty stadiums all over the country. And I'm just sitting there. I was glad I just took a second just to look around. The renovation there, by the way, is a 12 out of 10, what they did with their press box and their suites. And I've seen it in the past. It's been done for a few years, but there's something about the snow coming down just to take it in. And looking around at over 100,000 people, just, this is the year, we're going to do it, we're going to do it, you know, kind of thing. And then the ball goes in the air. And from the word go, there was one team that just seemed to want it more than the other team. I mean, from the very first series, Michigan looked like they've just, you know what, not today, had enough. And in Ohio State, to their credit, they kept battling. Their offense kept trying to make plays despite the wind and the snow, you know, in their passing game. But they kind of hung around, walked up at halftime. We were deciding, should we stay for the second half? We got to fly to Bedlam.
I was going to say, meanwhile, you got to fly.
Yeah, you got to fly to Bedlam to call that game. We're like, man, if we stay, the traffic getting out of here is going to be crazy. So as we're walking up, there's only one tunnel in the big house. We're walking up with Ohio State kicked the field goal with 13 seconds left. We walk up, beat the teams up that one tunnel. We get all the way up to the top of the bowels of that tunnel. And the locker room to the left of that tunnel is Ohio State. To the right across from each other is Michigan's. And we hear the team start to kind of jog up the tunnel, step into a doorway just to kind of give them room to get by us, because it's a very tight tunnel. And about halfway through the Ohio State team getting through, you start to hear some noise in the back of the Ohio State team. And you see some of the Ohio State players kind of looking around their shoulder, and the back end of the Ohio State team and coaches and trainers, whatever, is with their backs turned, and the Michigan team is coming up the tunnel. And they start kind of chirping at each other. And the Ohio State team at the front, they're still filing in one at a time to get into the locker room. Well, in the meantime, Michigan, the police and everybody, they're trying to hold Michigan off. Well, they're within 5 feet of each other. And you know how it's going. I mean, they're just Michigan's giving it to Ohio State. Ohio State's giving it to Michigan. I mean, it almost got interesting, you know, and they were able to, Jim Harbaugh got involved. He's like trying to get people apart. And then finally Ohio State got in their locker room, and Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, they were furious, you know, I guess insinuating that Ohio State had started that. Whatever happened, second half starts, Michigan came out, and it was just physicality. Yep. That's what this rivalry has been
there
built
go.
On,
yeah.
Woody and Bo. And Michigan's offensive line, it was just, especially in the second half, it was just, don't you do that again. Don't ever come back kind of approach. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State just couldn't match them in the trenches, and especially in the interior up to the linebackers. And Cade McNamara, I know Hassan Haskins had a monster game, but Cade McNamara, no one even knows who he is. I mean, you talk to anybody outside of Michigan or the Big Ten, say, who's Michigan's quarterback? They'd be like, I'm not sure. You know, is it Shea Patterson? So, like, they have no idea. They have no idea the job that this kid has done, how efficient he is, and what a great fit he is with their physicality. And, you know, jumbo sets, run the ball, possess the ball, and all of a sudden, play action, 8-yard gain on 3rd and 6. They're a confident football team that's playing with a chip on their shoulder. Now, the question is, so they deserved it. It was a celebration post-game of insanity, 100,000 people on the field. It was for the sport. It was a huge day. A sad day, of course, for Ohio State, huge day for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. But can they get back down? That was like an epic.
Yes.
Epic. Like, kind of like Ohio State when they beat Clemson and had to come back down and try to get ready for Alabama.
Years in the making.
I mean, yeah, Michigan put everything into this, and good for them. They, you know, they won it. Now, a week later, of all the teams you have to play, you get Iowa. Iowa.
Right.
I mean, of all the teams who has a history of just kind of sitting there like, hey, guys, how you doing? Hey, good win last week. That was good. That was impressive. All right. You ready to get into the wrestling mat? You ready to wrestle for 3.5-4 hours? That's what we're going to do. So I don't know who's going to win the game, but I'm very interested to see how Coach Harbaugh and the Michigan team comes back down to earth and preps, works their tail off to get ready for a physical battle against that Iowa defense in Indy on Saturday. I can't wait for that game.
I mean, that game has 16-13.
Totally. It's 100%. 100%.
It's going to be 16-13. It's going to be the ugliest thing you've seen, but the beauty is going to be in the eye of the beholder.
No, it's not ugly. It's just, it's the opposite of where I said at the opening of the season, I said, what's your theme for the year? I said defense. Because last year they couldn't practice tackling. They couldn't meet together. Defense is all about love for each other and being around each other. And they couldn't do it a year ago. So I mean, everybody, Alabama, everyone sucked on defense in 2020. 2021, they could get back to practicing. Now you're seeing teams play this 3-3-5. There's so many different ways. But defense has been a theme to me all year.
Yep.
No longer 48-45 every game you watch. Very refreshing to me that defense is back and it matters again. And that game, you're right, it's going to be turnover margin, which has been a strength of Iowa's. Turnover margin and field position will be a big, big 1980, like six kind of feel to this game between Iowa and Michigan. But I want to see the energy of Michigan, because Michigan just looked Ohio State in the eye and just said, we are going to come at you all day. Can they do that again against Iowa? It's going to take that kind of attitude again.
I said this on College Football Final, that of all the Harbaugh teams, this perhaps was the most unheralded that he's had. And here they are having the most success that he's had. And I think Fox is broadcasting that Big Ten championship. If I'm them, I just do it in grainy video. Go back to non-high def. Give me the good stuff with just the grainy defensive video and let's play some ball. Before we move on, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Also, they put the television show in a nice condensed audio form for you, so listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, ESPN's new podcast, Swaggoo and Perk, led by Marcus Spears, Swaggoo, and Kendrick Perkins. New episode every Tuesday morning. The feedback on the show has been phenomenal so far. Check them out. That's Swaggoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
One last thing, Michigan's offensive line, everyone's going to talk about Hassan Haskins. He ran like a man possessed. It was physical running, but their offensive line, they look great. I mean, in their uniforms, they look like they've not had an offensive line like that in a long time. I'm talking about, you know, we're going to run and we're still going to run.
Yeah,
like that kind of offensive line. And they are just put together. Michigan's offensive line coach, Sharon Moore, did an amazing job. Just got to give the Michigan offensive line credit, especially in the second half and late in that game when they had to run the ball. They were able to do that.
It's fun game. And that game was entertaining for numerous reasons, as was the Iron Bowl in which Auburn had that game won for 3 quarters and 12 minutes. It was it. They had everything won up front against Alabama, 10-0 late. And then Alabama comes back. Bryce Young has his Heisman moment. And I'm to the point, Kirk, with Alabama, that's just who they are this year. That's just who they're going to find a way to win. It's not going to be great, but it's going to happen. And that's just the team that they are heading into the SEC championship game.
How about the last drive, the last couple drives in that game with the game on the line? You're thinking, okay, they're just not in the cards today. You know what I mean? Like Auburn, to their credit, Derek Mason put together a defensive plan. You got to give them credit because they were able to do what they needed to do. I'm talking at the end of regulation. Mm-hmm. And they put together a drive late. And Bryce Young, it's almost like he is so calm. Like, and he does. I'm just saying, it's almost like, does he realize what's at stake? Like, does he care? Does he care if they win or lose? Like, he is so chill. I did a feature with him a couple weeks ago that's going to air this week on game day. And a big part of that is, man, like, what is up with, you know, whether you throw a game-winning touchdown or you fumble or you get sacked, like, exact same facial expression.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, you know, it's just the way I, you know, way I've always been, you know.
California kid.
I mean, but cerebral off the charts. He told me something, which I thought, he's like, man, I always looked at myself because of my dad and my high school coach. I was always big in preparation. I've always prided myself in watching film and having answers. Then I came to Alabama my freshman year, and I thought I prepared. Like, I knew how to prepare. And I got around Sark and especially Mac Jones, and I watched how I prepared, and then I watched how Mac Jones prepared. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, I thought I prepared well. He's preparing 10 times how much more I prepare. So being around Sark and Mac Jones his freshman year, when he wasn't being talked about, wasn't playing, but he was consuming everything, knowledge, how to prepare. And now he's using that, what he learned in Bill O'Brien's system. And I think that gives him that level of just kind of zen. You know, the more prepared he is, the more he doesn't have time for a lot. He's just not one of an emotional guy. He's just busy reading linebackers, safeties, just like his preparation. Oh, corner's doing that. I'm going to do that. So that's where he goes during the game. And that was really on display in that football game where Auburn came up. Man, they were pressure. That Alabama offensive line, once again, outmanned, could not take care of Bryce Young. But to their credit, when the chips were on the table, they made the plays to get that thing into overtime. And Bryce Young and, I mean, the receiver, they're down Jamison Williams. And you're like, on the road, rivalry game. There's no way they're going to pull it out.
Right.
Pull it out.
That's why I wouldn't look. I know that offensive line has had some issues, and I know up next is Georgia and their defensive front, but I wouldn't count them out. I think Georgia's the better team, and I think everybody agrees. But would you count out Alabama in an SEC championship game in Atlanta? I wouldn't.
Plus, they're going to all week hear about how bad they looked against Auburn, and now they got to go up against Georgia. They're going to get killed. They have no. It's almost like I texted Pete Golding. I was like, it's a win-win. You won the game. And now you're going to hear about how bad you are and how you don't have much of a chance against Georgia for an entire week. I mean, that's Alabama is going to hear about how they don't have a chance in that game. They may lose the game, but they're going to come in swinging as a very rare opportunity to be an underdog. And they just want to hear about how bad they are all week and then just go out and play and see what happens.
That's going to be a fun championship weekend slate as we march off the final regular season of the college football season, which I find remarkable. We're already at this point. I want to get into Oklahoma State because I find that the Cowboys are the one team, and we talked about this a little bit last week, they could screw everything up for a lot of people because they just beat 10th-ranked Oklahoma. Baylor's 8th. Who may or may not, I got to look at the rankings and all that, see if they can move up or not. But let's just say they don't, and they stay 8th. You're talking about conference champion, one loss team that's coming off a top 10 win and a top 8 win. At that point, I like Oklahoma State to get in.
Well, that'll be the debate. I mean, if It's what's great about this weekend is there's no foregone conclusions.
Right.
You know, it's not like, okay, Ohio State and Clemson and Alabama are all going to win. Okay, who's going to be that fourth team? Like we've said all year, you don't have that. I mean, you could make a case that Alabama could rally and beat Georgia. That could happen. Iowa could beat Michigan. You know, that very easily could happen. Cincinnati could lose to a very talented Houston team.
Right.
Very easily could happen. One thing we know for sure, Notre Dame will not lose this weekend. So they're not playing. So they're in a spot. And then we have Oklahoma State and Baylor. And Baylor, I think, will move to 7. They're more likely will probably move ahead of Ohio State. And now they're in a Big 12 championship game. And if there's enough upsets ahead of them, why not Baylor have a shot as a Big 12 champion, you know, to get in there? There's enough wackiness that can happen. If Georgia wins, I've tweeted this out. If Georgia wins and Cincinnati loses and Michigan loses and Oklahoma State loses to Baylor, I mean, who would you put in there? I mean,
Georgia, and that's all very possible.
Oh, yeah. This isn't like 20-point underdogs. Right. These are like – what I just said could very easily happen. So if that happened, you got Georgia. I don't know. Is Notre Dame 11-1? But look, they haven't beaten a ranked team. I think they have three teams with above 500 record on their resume. And they've improved greatly, but are they a foregone conclusion to be in there? Is Baylor, as a Big 12 champ, get in there? Cincinnati's out. Is Michigan, even though they lost, maybe would they make it? Would Alabama, even though they lost, would if Oregon looked great in their Pac-12 championship and avenged the loss to Utah, would they come in with their flag, with their O, saying, whoa, don't forget? I mean, you could make a case, maybe if Oregon like makes a statement. If all that wackiness happens up front, could make a case for Oregon over a Notre Dame, you know, just because of who they played and their schedule and the win against Ohio State in Columbus. I don't know, man. It's there are no foregone conclusions, and it'll be must see TV coming up, you know, this weekend, starting Friday night with the Pac-12 championship.
I say this respectfully. I want the committee to have to work. Like, I want them to have to sit there and think and work. Because you're right. Past years, it's 1, 2, 3 has been slotted. Let's debate for the fourth team. It's a possibility. You're right. Every scenario you just mentioned, this isn't miracle on ice type stuff. This is legitimate possibility. And that's what makes this final weekend fun. I do. Which game are you calling this week, Kirk?
And I was going to try to look at the point spreads the early in the week, just to give you an idea of when we say that, you know, it's not that far fetched.
Oh, I'll go point spreads.
Yeah. Right now, Utah is favored by 3 against Oregon. Oklahoma State only favored by 5 in their game.
Yeah.
Georgia is favored by 6.5. The biggest one, the two tied right at this point, Cincinnati by 10.5, Michigan by 10.5. So That's where we are with at least on Monday with some of these games and how close. I think the two games that we just said are 10.5. I think right now on paper, I would expect those games to be closer. I think those games have a chance to be much closer than 10.5.
Yeah, by my math, my 16-13 prediction is inside the 10.5 for the Big Ten championship. So I'm not a betting expert. I'll leave that to Felica and everybody else. But I would love Iowa plus the points in that one.
Yeah, but I will be in Las Vegas Friday night.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to calling Oregon and Utah rematch from just a couple weeks ago where Oregon got handled. They bounced back last week against Oregon State rivalry game, and now they get Utah again. So I don't think Utah can win and probably bounce, you know, if all that chaos happens all the way up because of all the losses they had early in the year. But Oregon, you never know. They may have a shot. And again, they would have to win and look really, really good doing it. But you know, they're not quite out of it just yet.
So by the way,
they're playing for the Rose Bowl. I mean, You still get a shot if you don't get into the playoff. You're still going to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, let's not make the Rose Bowl a consolation prize. To me, it's the greatest bowl game of them all, top to bottom. I grew up in the mountains of Pasadena wanting to go to that game. So every once in a while, Herb, we have an opportunity to connect with the listener of the podcast and people who had dedicatedly listened to this show for 13 weeks. One of them is former Wake Forest quarterback Riley Skinner. He listens every single week. And he always points out very politely that Wake Forest gets no respect. No one talks about Wake Forest. Where's my love for the Deacon Deacon? So Riley Skinner, this portion is for you and all of Wake Forest fans. You got Dave Clawson to sign the extension. He's not going anywhere. Sam Hartman got a coveted helmet sticker on College Football Final for his effort on Saturday. But Kirk, let's take a minute to congratulate Wake Forest on winning the Atlantic, backs against the wall based on what happened with NC State in North Carolina on Friday. And now they've got a 10-win Pitt game. I know 10-2, Pitt and Wake isn't for a spot in the playoff, but it is for the ACC championship.
It is. And I'm glad Riley listens, number one, and he's right. He's right. Wake Forest, if we're just going to all be very, very honest with each other, I think we all have been trained, you know, with certain conferences and certain teams. And I'm not saying this is right or fair, but I think there are certain teams that we look at and it'd be like Kansas those years with Todd Reesing. They got hot in 07, 08, right around that era. And Kansas, it wasn't like we were talking about them like we would about OU or Texas if they were really good. Kind of like when Kansas State used to be good.
Yeah.
It's almost like no, they're doing a good job. So it's nothing personal towards Wake Forest. It's just when you have a history of being a team in a conference where you're constantly trying to like grow and build credibility, it doesn't happen. You know, where you get to the ACC championship in a year. And I know they've had other really, when he played, they had some good teams. Yeah. So it just takes a while for people to get accustomed to seeing that brand, you know, and when it happens, you know, not just 1 year or 2 years, but it gets, they get it going. I think there's more respect, and, you know, Wake has that in basketball, I feel like. But I think football, especially under Dave Clawson, the leadership that he's been providing, I think they're definitely heading in a direction. Hopefully they have staying power. Hopefully we'll be talking about them next year again, and they become a brand every year. They become like a top 25 program.
That'd be a fun one to watch. Kenny Pickett, regarded by many, is the top quarterback coming up in the NFL draft. And I know it's not all about that. It's for the love of Saturday and the sport. But Pickett's going to be a fun watch. Sam Hartman, A.T. Perry, and that offense is going to be a fun watch. So best of luck to both Pitt and Wake Forest. That game, 8 p.m. Eastern on ABC for the rights to call yourself ACC champion. And we will wrap up this week like we always do each and every podcast with why we love the sport.
That's why we love this sport.
The reason I love the sport this weekend.
This is why I love this sport.
Man, there are so many ways to go with this week. Kirk, lead us off. Why do you love the sport?
Well, I think you and I talked about last weekend what makes college football unique when you have rivalry weekend. You know, you have rivalry games. And then some years you get excited about a rivalry weekend and there's one or two that stand out, but not like what we had this year. You know, from the Egg Bowl on Thursday night, your game with North Carolina, North Carolina State. Just like you know, in my case, I was working on my board and doing work, and you know, I'm watching the game, and I'm kind of and then the last quarter, I'm just like mesmerized by what's happening in this game and the emotion of the game going back and forth, and. It continued into Saturday. You know, I told you about my day on Saturday, mm-hmm. and it was just a great reminder about one of the reasons I love college football is the rivalries that this sport has to offer and how unexpected and unpredictable the outcomes can be and how much is at stake. You know, I know there's rivalries in the NFL and other sports, but not with the passion and the emotion. And none bigger than the Ohio State-Michigan game, where Ohio State has dominated that series. Tressel and Urban Meyer and Ryan Day. And Jim Harbaugh has been dealing with everything he's had to deal with, has never beaten Ohio State. And then the way they did it, they didn't just beat Ohio State. It was the way they did it that really stood out to me. And I'm an Ohio State guy. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I was happy that Ohio State obviously lost, but I was happy for Michigan that they got a win. You know, I was happy for the sport and really for my family, my kids, who are just spoiled with Ohio State winning every year. I was happy for them to realize what this rivalry, this pain is all about when you lose to your rival. And then to see the celebration after that game and how much it meant to the Michigan people. That was a great reminder for me. You know, you don't see that. What other sport do you see 100,000 people for on the field for an hour singing songs about how happy they are? It's like the World Cup is the only other thing I can think of where you see that kind of reaction to a 60-minute football game. So that game, the rivalry weekend, is a great summation of why I just love this sport so much.
So good. And yeah, it was, I felt good. It felt good for Jim Harbaugh. I've got no connection to this, to that rivalry, other than I felt good for Jim Harbaugh being able to get it done. And why I love the sport, and I'll piggyback with you, what makes rivalry weekend so special is no matter what your team's going through the season, if you've won a lot of games, you haven't won a lot of games, you get the opponent's best for four quarters. Very rare is the day when you've got a mismatch on the field that mismatch doesn't kind of evolve through the game and show itself by the end of the fourth quarter. But on a rivalry Saturday, it doesn't matter. That whole cliche, throw the records out, it's true because the game means so much. And there isn't any other Saturday of the season, of the 13, 14 Saturdays we get to cover this beautiful sport, where one game will cause an entire stadium to cry in happiness, a head coach to cry during the post-game interviews, players, captains, seniors to cry on senior day. An absolute love of this work that they've put in. I watch senior day and I get emotional watching senior day. I got emotional watching Matt Campbell in their game cry when he was hugging his seniors that were ready to leave. Mm-hmm. And it's just what makes college football unique to any other thing. On one weekend, the final regular season weekend of the year, look across the country. You'll see a head coach in tears. You'll see a parent in tears. You'll see a player in tears. Why? Because it means so much. And for that Saturday, it's just, for me, it says, you know what? I'm still glad there's that purity in college football where 4 hours causes tears of happiness and sadness. And I love it.
Yeah. That's well said, man. Awesome.
And by the way, my apologies to, I don't have that feeling right now. Arizona State just won their fifth against Arizona. So I don't have that appreciation yet for the rivalry not being lopsided right now. So Herm, get your win. Go get another win against Arizona. So to wrap things up, are you going red eye Jedi from Vegas to game day?
Yeah, I get in around 4 a.m. and
let's go
on the set. Yeah, that'll be fun. On the set around 8:30 for Sports Center with Randy, and then we'll do game day. Yeah, it'll be fun night.
I did the 5 a.m. flight out of Raleigh Saturday morning, landed in Connecticut at 10 a.m., and I was in Bristol ready to go for the noon kickoff.
Did it great?
3 hours of sleep. Are you kidding me? 22 hours of adrenaline? It's awesome.
Going on adrenaline. That's it. I was up at 2 a.m.
I saw.
On Saturday morning, and I just could not get back to sleep. I'm just like partying up. And I'm just so glad I've been doing this for 26 years, dude. I'm so glad that I still do that. Like, I'm so glad I'm still like a kid where you're excited about the next day. And I hope, I don't know if I ever lose that. I don't know if that's the time to stop doing this. And I don't know if I ever did NFL. I don't know if I would ever feel that way, you know, like I do about college. And that's why I just don't see myself ever leaving this sport. I just love it so much.
There's so much at stake. And I'm with you. Like, yeah, I had a 2.5-hour nap. Oh, that's all I got for sleep Friday to Saturday.
Yeah.
I woke up so excited because I knew what was coming. Chaos and it was great. Look, I could sit here and gush about the sport all day, but we've got tight schedules, especially.
Well, we appreciate the Monday through Friday on SportsCenter. We appreciate you. Spreading the love to the sport.
Try to. You got to get it out there and let people know that.
Hard to do sometimes, but we appreciate you doing that.
I get it. NBA's in season and NFL and all this, that, and the other. But man, I get 13 Saturdays of this stuff, and I'm not going to let one of them go by without getting it the attention it deserves. So,
Well, it's the second most popular sport in the country behind the NFL. So,
you should get it
out there.
Yeah. Let's go. Let's this is our official campaign for Monday through Friday college football coverage nonstop.
Nonstop.
and we're going to do our best to it. So, Herb, have a good week. Enjoy championship weekend. Look, I don't know what the schedule is for next week. I know you'll be in Bristol Sunday. I'll be in Bristol Sunday. So I don't know what we've got going on for the pod, but we'll get something figured out after championship weekend.
You got it, man. You got it. Okay, buddy.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.